There we go. Okay, so I'm just gonna restart by introducing myself. I'm Ellie, and I'm the starter of the Catalyst Club, where basically I'm interviewing professors and industry worker members to learn more about this business and entrepreneurship and marketing. So, and then you can introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm David Belasco. I'm an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at the USC Marshall School of Business, a two-time entrepreneur with some exits, and a previous lawyer. And most importantly, I'm the former professor of one Amy Liu from
Oh
USC in 2004.
my God, yeah. Okay. So my first question is, because you've been teaching at USC Marshall over the years and you've been front row to seeing so many people be founders and start companies, how's your understanding of what a great entrepreneur, how has it evolved over time?
Well, I've interviewed probably 350 to 400 entrepreneurs during
Wow.
my class on mindset, and there's no one type of entrepreneur. There's certainly, diverse backgrounds and perspectives, but I will say there's a couple things that always stand out, and without them, I don't know if anyone will follow you. So the two things that are required, and these are some people think they're traits, some I think they're skills that you can practice. Otherwise, why are we teaching mindset? But the first is optimism. I've never seen
Yeah.
someone who doesn't think they can solve the problem and have this endless supply of optimism.
Yeah.
And as the founder of Kinko's once told me, like, no one wants to follow a leader who's tired, haggard, or miserable. You want to follow someone who's optimistic, and you want someone
Yeah.
that's leading who's optimistic. So I think that's one that's across the board. Any successful entrepreneur believes they can solve a problem uniquely and better than the competition. The second thing that is required is a stomach for it, meaning resilience, because you're just going to get knocked down over and over and over again. And as much as we romanticize how glorious entrepreneurship is when it works, but it's just really hard. It's just so defeating sometimes in the moment, not globally defeating where you're ready to pack it in, but just it's tough. And so anyone who's been in a business and started one, particularly when you launch it, from scratch, there's just a lot of gut punches. And there's some days where you think there's just can't make it. But the resilience part of just like getting up the next day, going into work, doing it again. So I think those are the two things. But the question of how it's evolved, which just I've looked more at mindset than skill set. So that's where my focus has been over the last 15, 16 years.
I mean, I'm sure that's you've gotten to see a lot over that course. So also I read a little bit about how you had your own company prior to becoming a professor, and I think because most professors they just study entrepreneurship and then they teach it. I was kind of wondering how your experience being an entrepreneur has changed the way you teach.
Well, it's a great question because there are a lot of people who teach entrepreneurship who have not been entrepreneurs. And that troubles me because it is an academic area that you can publish and you can write on it and you can research, but most schools, including USC, don't really reward the professors for researching and publishing because they're not tenured. So for me, I've always really valued what we call adjunct professors or people who've done it and started. So the way that, when I first started, so mine overlapped. I didn't sell my company and then start teaching. I had my company when I was teaching your mom, and I exited my company in 2007. God, it's so long ago. And I've tried some other companies since then as well. But the idea is like I want people teaching in the classroom who really have the experience of what it takes to do in the real world. And so that's always informed my teaching is I want to give people the practical aspects. That's why when we're talking with entrepreneurs that come into the classroom, we really ask the hard questions and the personal questions about success and failure and purpose and identity. Those are the things that shape you and guide you more than what is your product and what problem are you solving? Those are really important from the business side. So I just want to make sure that the students in my class get a realistic dose because the media and even academia celebrates people who are really successful, right? It was one after another, billionaire, exit, startup. You have to occasionally say, tell me about your failures and setbacks. And people are like, oh my God, my two first companies burnt to the ground. And so it's really important that we give a balanced perspective. But I think I bring some reality and practical approaches to it. And I was a lawyer before that, so I sort of have like the ways to protect yourself, as well as the ways to start and grow a business.
Do you think that how is like being a lawyer like affected how you teach and how you even like look into being working as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think the longer that you're a lawyer, the more risk averse you become, because a lawyer's job is to counsel your client on how not to get sued, how to, not have product liability issues, how to not get audited. And so you tend to be take safer courses of action. Where, and that's what you want from your lawyer. You want your lawyer to tell you, here are all the things that can go wrong. And then you want to be informed and do them anyway if you're the entrepreneur. So I think it keeps me, because I've been an entrepreneur longer than I've been a lawyer, well, practicing lawyer. The lawyer trained you to look at all the things that can go wrong, all the threats to the business, and not as much as the strengths. So if you were to do a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, the lawyer focuses on the weaknesses and the threats. The entrepreneur focuses on the strengths and the opportunities of what this could be. And so I think by doing both, I'm a pretty optimistic person. And so I sort of get enough where I used to do columns of advantages and disadvantages of each thing. Now you still do those mentally, maybe even on paper, but I still go with that gut of like, does my gut pull me in this direction? Is it keeping me up at night? Is it exciting me to get up in the morning? And then I follow that. But the lawyer side of it is good because I know what can go wrong, and so I can navigate around that or plan around that from the outset. And also clarity, at the beginning. Well, so you and I go into a business, it's a partnership, and no, let's just do it on a handshake. No, let's just be clear about what our expectations are, what our ownership will be, who's going to contribute what and why. And many times you don't need legal agreements, and there are great partnerships that have never had anything more than a napkin or a one-page agreement. And those are great, but you have legal agreements for basically two outcomes. One is things go really, really bad and people want to blame each other. But the other is if they go really, really, like they exceed expectations, they go really well and there's more money, then everyone's like, wait, I didn't expect this much to go well. And Ellie, I think I deserve more than you. So you want to have those agreements in place for all the situations that can arise. But being a lawyer helps you really think things about methodically from both the legal and practical perspective of what could go wrong.
Like kind of on your point about what things could go wrong and how so many things do go wrong. What do you think is like the most like common reason for like when you see a promising company that like plateaus and they just stop growing? Like, what do you think the most, do you see like any patterns and like how
Yeah,
that happens?
statistically, the biggest issues with startups and emerging companies are people, the partnership of disagreements. So USC has a thing called Founder Central where they have classes on this, how to keep your partnership aligned and communicating well, all those things. So the businesses, let's put the business part of it aside, in terms of what product or service you're selling, but the partnership issues are usually what can sidetrack a business, especially early on. And then, I'd have to look and think about what. There's so many things that can go wrong in a business. You don't grow fast enough. You grow too fast. You have, I had a business with my sister that we sold, that did really, really well, and we sold it in 2007. Then she bought it back, and it had a product recall. Your mom could have that. Like it's just like, or you have, do you know what a concentration issue is?
No.
So you say that. It's how many customers you have, and does any one or two customers representing a significant percentage of your business? So,
Oh.
if Tower 28 had, 70% of its sales through Sephora,
Yeah.
that could be dangerous, because if that ever relationship ever ended or had a problem,
Yeah.
70% of your business. So banks look for that, companies look for that. But what do you do? Someone gives you that amount of, I mean, we had business like from
Yeah.
huge companies. And they're credit worthy and they pay and everything like that. So like you can't turn the business down. Like it's
Yeah.
like, so those types of issues. Financing can be an issue if companies are running
Yeah.
cash starved all the time. But it could be there, that's the thing. There could be so many different ways that a business gets derailed. I know I would I almost want to ask ChatGPT right now, like, what are the
Yeah, reasons.
top five reasons for businesses failing? No real market need, poor cash flow management, weak marketing and customer acquisition, lack of adaptability, poor leadership and decision making.
Yeah.
Those are my answers.
Yeah. Those are good ones. Probably statistically, you have
Probably
backed
close.
up. Kind of actually, I had a question about adapting. I think over like the span of like the past couple of few years, past decades, there's been so much change in the industry and there's so much disruption. Do you think what do you think like separates companies that are able to keep up and adapt with the industry and the changes, and what do you think the difference are the ones that get like left behind and don't adapt?
Well, in the question contains the answer. It's the speed of adaptability because things change so quickly. And for companies that hold on to the past because that worked for us before,
Yeah.
that doesn't mean it's going to work for you going forward. So I think the ability to iterate quickly, and even if it's just testing something, A/B testing your marketing, your strategy, your product development. It's the ability to adapt quickly for your customers. So always having something in your customer's hand. And I think the feedback loop is important, right? So you get all these surveys after you fly an airline or you have a
Yeah.
DoorDash meal, and my inbox is full with, what did you think about Target's returns? I just threw some stuff. And
Yeah.
so like it's if you can have a feedback loop where customers are really providing you honest critique of your product.
Yeah.
And you get that often. That I think is it's just so valuable. But I think it's the speed of adaptability. Business moves so quickly, particularly now,
Yeah.
that most of the thing, many of the things we buy and sell are online, and you don't even face the customer as much anymore. So I think this the speed of adaptability, and the ability to weather a punch.
Yeah. So another question that I had is I think a lot of people think that like the foundation of a great company is a great idea. I was wondering like after what you've seen, do you think how much do you think the idea and the quality of the idea matters compared to everything else?
Well, it's all about execution.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have a ton of ideas. I have a bunch of ideas. And then when one comes out, you're like, oh, that's my idea. Well, they're executing and you're thinking about it. So it's only about the execution. There have been ideas that I've executed that I still am mad that they didn't work. But at least I tried them. And that's sort of what you got to remember is that's the winning. That's the striving is being an entrepreneur is putting yourself out there to succeed or fail. It's a competition, it's a game. Remind me of the question again.
Yeah, it was more just like how much like do you think the idea behind a company is
Yeah.
relevant compared to, I don't know, like the
If
team
you've
surrounding
got an idea that is protectable intellectual property that you have a patent on or a service mark that really provides a protectable advantage over time, then the idea is great, There are very few new ideas, right?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't wait for lightning to strike for me to have the greatest idea. So the business I'm working on now with two people your mom knows, Pete Carroll and Varun
Yeah.
Soni. So other people teach competitive mindset and other people, train companies. Other people have institutes at colleges. We think we have a unique approach. We are obsessively passionate about it.
Yeah.
We've proven it at USC. We've proven it in companies. We've taught YPO. And so, do we think we're the only ones doing it? No. There's a good saying about this was from actually the leader of the Grateful Dead that both my partners
Oh,
love.
yeah.
It says you don't want to be the best one doing something. You want to be the only one doing it. And that doesn't mean you're the only one in the category, but it means you're doing it in a way that's different than everybody else.
Yeah.
And so I think we're doing it in a way that's different than everybody else. I think I teach in a way that's different than other people. So even though there are a ton of classes and a ton of professors, I think we're trying to play a game that no one else is playing. So that's the thing is like when you find your niche and you find the way and the personality and your style and your rules and your beliefs and your philosophy,
Yeah.
and your practices, and you put those all together, it really is you.
Yeah.
You and your team, the personality of you. And so I think it's all about execution,
Yeah.
and you want to do it in your way. So if you win or lose, you're taking your best shot, your best pitch. And so if I lose, I'm like, I put everything I had into it. It was my DNA, it was my thought, it
Yeah.
was my heart and soul, and it didn't make it. I don't have many regrets.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I approach it.
Yeah, and then kind of to like what you are teaching about like the entrepreneurial mindset. So how much do you think like the entrepreneur success is like a mindset versus like a skill? Like, do you think the mindset can be taught or trained or fixed?
It better be, right? If I'm
Yeah.
teaching entrepreneurial mindset. So some people think, oh, there's a myth that you're either an entrepreneur or you're not,
Yeah.
and you're either optimistic or you're not, you're either resilient or you're gritty. And
Yeah.
so I can say unequivocally, we
Yeah.
consider these. So when people think of like resilience or optimism or compassion or belief, all these things, they think of them as traits that you inherit from your parents and your DNA. And I think people can get some of that, much of that, from the way they're born. Some people come out happy and smiling, right? And
Yeah.
some people come out depressed. But they are teachable skills, meaning like anything, if you practice them,
Yeah.
you build a habit around them, and then it becomes what they call automatitious, I think is that the word, subconscious, but automatitious. You're doing them automatically.
Yeah.
And so I hope, because I'm a lifelong learner who's trying to get better and teach this. And so we have a methodology for teaching the science of purpose, the science of identity, purpose-based identity versus achievement-based identity, why one's healthy, why one will burn you out, why one will leave you better emotional, relational health, higher performance, like all these things. The research and the data is out there. So they are teachable. And I think that's why my class is so large and popular, is because
Yeah.
students feel it. They feel like, oh my God, if I, and I started this because I wished I had learned these skills at 20 instead of 50,
Yeah.
because my life, I have a great life, but my life would have been considerably better. I would have had lower fear of failure, higher self-esteem. I would have taken more risks. And the research shows you'd make more money, higher net income, all these things with a purpose-based identity. So I not only have to believe, but we've proven through our approach. And this approach has been proven at USC in the classroom, at USC in sports, in the NFL with Pete Carroll, and with Fortune 100 companies, that all of them say this leads to higher, better results. So they're all skills that can train, but it's not easy, right? It's not easy
Yeah.
to change your practices, particularly if we've got one of these in our hands all day. But if you build these habits, and as soft as some of these are considered, whether it's joy or gratitude or
Yeah.
self-compassion or forgiveness, these are the skills that determine your life more than whether you can create a spreadsheet.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that you've been able to like pass it on. I think my mom always talks about how like amazing going to your class was and how it really changed her way of thinking. So I think it's great that you're able to pay it forward.
Thanks. That was the early days too, before I had figured it out. That was my second year of teaching, and now we have a methodology. I taught she was she taught it, or she was in a course, was basically the business plan, launching a business. Now it's all around mindset, and the business has there are other courses for launching the company, but I wanted to teach a class on mindset. And I think I know it pays, because I've seen it. I have drawers
Yeah.
full of heartfelt letters from students that said it changed their lives. And so that's what really sort of keeps me going and keeps me excited about what we're
Amazing.
doing.
Yeah. So kind of to your point about like what you teach, what do you think like the biggest gap is between like what business schools like typically teach versus what determines success in like the real world?
Say it again. Someone just posted on LinkedIn while we're talking here about how valuable my class is. Just write it right here. I just got it from a guest. I'm
You
gonna
have all
give it
your
to
stats right there with you. Yeah, it
you. I'm gonna
works.
give it to you right now. Hold on. Let me see, man. This is the chief marketing. I'm sorry. This is the chief human resource officer for Apollo. Apollo is one of the biggest private equity
Oh,
firms in the world. They have
yeah.
180 companies. So I'm gonna give you this link, and just, I haven't read it yet, but let me put it in the chat. That's pretty funny. Right on time.
Yeah, let me look.
There it is.
I'm gonna open that up real quick so I have it for when after I'll read it. So cool. You literally were like just talking about it. That's great.
Just got pinged on it. All right, what was the question? I missed it.
No, yeah, it's more just kind of like how business schools like typically teach entrepreneurship and like how that class is different kind of from yours and how, I don't know, teaching business in like a very analytical way maybe is different than what you teach.
It is, but we teach both and all. So like
Yeah.
most business schools in USC certainly teaches, has plenty of courses on, introduction to entrepreneurship, feasibility, launch, and then we've got everything in between from, environmental entrepreneurship to social impact, to tech, to digital playbook, to you name it. We have
Yeah.
toy. So there's all these sort of more niche topics, but the process of teaching entrepreneurship is taking your idea from concept to testing to feasibility to launch.
Yeah.
And a lot of schools use the God, why am I blanking on his name? Who came up with the MVP, minimum viable product. It'll come to me in a second. Lean startup. So that a lot of people teach the lean startup method.
Yeah.
And USC does that as well. So mine is a, I think, a side path that goes in parallel to that, that while we're teaching you that the practices and the how to test your concept to bring it to the market, mine is about mental preparation, competitive mindset, to so how you can live to be the best you in your business and your life. Now, I can't, we don't say that as much in a catalog because we're in a business school, but like it is helping. How do we have a flourishing mindset in all parts of our life, not
Yeah.
just when you're, a daughter or a sister or a teammate, but in every part of your life, how do you show up for people and compete to be the best you, to be the best, to be present,
Yeah.
to give yourself completely, to listen actively to people? All these things are skills that you practice. So mine goes alongside that. If you think of this main track of how you get through from concept to testing to launch, and all the things you have to do. Mine is how do you prepare your mind for all those things and the
Yeah.
resilience that you need to do it.
Yeah. That's so interesting and cool because I think it's such a key part. I think it's the most key part is like the way you go into thinking, how you do things.
Does anyone ever teach you how to think? Does anyone ever teach you how your family does? Does anyone ever
Yeah.
teach you in all their classes? Has anyone ever taught you how to listen?
No, I
Not
don't think I've
really.
gone that one
Not
yet.
really. And so, like, it's the most important thing we do. And no one really teaches us how to actively listen, how to listen collaboratively, how to actually not be thinking about the next question that you're going to ask. You're very good at this, by the way. You're already responding to what I'm saying, but like fully listening to what I'm saying and then digesting it and thinking about, is there a response? Because most of us are just thinking about, how do I sound smart? How do I
Yeah.
answer this? So it's just interesting that, like, there's nothing in our curriculum about how to actively listen. And then the mindset stuff, whether it's mindfulness and meditation and all that
Yeah.
other, those are different modalities, but I just think it's so important. Where did you go to high school?
I go to Marlboro right
Yeah, so you're getting all of this. At Marlboro, they have everything.
now. Yeah, I'm really blessed. They do have like some things that like we get to like learn about. There's some like mindset stuff that they have like different speakers come in and talk to us. But kind of going on to your journey as being a teacher and teaching all these young entrepreneurs and people who are so ambitious to start companies, do you think what's like the most important question that you find that you think young aspiring entrepreneurs should be asking themselves, but they don't?
Most important question to ask themselves: am I in it? Am I fully in it? And so, when there's some students who are like, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, that's great. And they do get together with a few friends. They're like, best idea on Friday by Friday wins. And let's go now. Like, that's not the way to get into business. You get three MBAs. They all have similar backgrounds, and they're all like, let's go into business. I think it's whether you're in it. So there are people who've said, like, sometimes the idea or the concept finds you, and then you can't escape. You can't
Yeah.
let it alone. You can't sleep on it. Somebody said, like, yeah, you become a slave to it. I don't feel it that way, but I feel like once you Once you're in it, I mean, you'll do anything to protect it. You love it so much that you'll do any, I'm sure like Tower 28, how many kids are in your family? Three?
Three, three, yeah.
Yeah. So like Tower 28 is your fourth kid. It's your
Yeah, oh,
fourth kid,
definitely.
And so like you put so much of your time and heart and energy into it that if one thing, if you got sick one day or you had like a setback, it's not going to give you up for adoption. It's like a business.
No,
Like,
I hope not.
one thing goes bad, you're not going to quit. And so it's that you're in it. And so the things that haven't worked for me in life generally have been things where I'm not completely committed. Me and
Yeah.
one of my mentors once said, you can't get anywhere with one foot on the dock and one foot in the boat.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a good metaphor. Like sometimes when you're like, why didn't that work? You're like, was I really committed? Like I would have like done anything for it. And the answer is usually no. So you just have to ask people like, how much are you in it? And if someone's just say, I can't leave this alone. I've spent my own money on it. I stay up at night. I'm not attending to my classes because I'm on a, like I've had students quit school to pursue something because they
Yeah.
raise money. And like, you can always come back to school and finish if you've got something that you can't sleep on. But I also think it helps to get some experience too. Like your
Yeah.
mom was getting experience while she was sort of testing ideas, and she went
Yeah.
and worked for other companies and watched them make mistakes and do things right and had good mentors and bad mentors. And like all of that calculates into how you will run your company. She was actually a pretty late founder
Yeah.
compared to many. So I think the question I just ask is just like, are you committed no matter what happens?
Yeah. I think that question kind of answered my next one, but I think there's multiple answers to the next one. It's kind of if any of your students, if all your students forgot everything that you had taught them, but they could only take away one thing, what would that like key piece of advice be, or like that one takeaway that you would want them to have?
Figure out who you are. Understand, I mean, when I say who you are, I mean the inner work to figure out what are your beliefs, what are your uncompromising principles, what are things that you love and that you will fight for. And then once you figure out who you are, you go all in on your strengths.
Yeah.
You want to like here are the things that Ellie does that's A plus plus, here's A minus. Here are things that are like at C's. Some of those C things will disqualify you, meaning like you can't get promoted if you're socially inept or mean or something like that. So
Yeah.
sometimes you get the C to a B, but you focus on the things that make you you
Yeah.
and that bring out the best in you, because that's your only competitive advantage in life is being, no one's going to be a better you than you. And
Yeah.
so we want to give you the tools so that you're a skilled operator of you. You're not trying to be someone else. You're secure in who you are, and you can just really accelerate and amplify your greatness.
Yeah.
And so that's just is like figuring out who you are. And that takes work, it takes time, and it will change over the course of your lifetime. You're not going to be the same at how old are you? 17, 16?
I'm 15.
15. Okay. Sorry. So you're going to be different at 15 than 20, than 30, than 40. You're supposed to
Yeah.
change. But asking these questions probably doesn't change. Who am I? What's my place in the world? Where do I
Yeah.
find purpose and love and things like that? The questions don't change, but you will. So I'd say doing the inner work, and that can be journaling, it can be, writing things down. We take people through this proprietary process of like 30 different exercises that create a playbook for your life.
Yeah.
And so I just say do the inner work.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much. Here, I'll stop. That was the last question.
I hope it's helpful.
Yeah, here, I'll stop recording.